You're listening to Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Hello, everybody. Chris Landry here for this Thursday, November 7th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Yes, we've got LSU-Alabama headlining the matchup, the football weekend, quite frankly. It's weekend in the NFL, weekend in college football. This is perhaps the game of the year. We hope it lives up to its hype, its expectations. The importance of the game, though, cannot be overstated. We're going to get into that matchup, how I see it, things to look forward to into the games within the game, so to speak. But we thought, and this was at the request of good folks at Jason at Radio Influence, said, why don't you do, with your background, LSU, coaching there, times against your background with Saban, go through the LSU-Alabama rivalry, if you want to call it that, the history. We're going to get into that. We're going to go into the history of these two schools as it relates to playing one another, what it's mean, how it's evolved over the years. So I'm going to go through, I think brings about some interesting tidbits, things that have played out for some of you that maybe are a little bit younger and maybe see this game through the prism of, you know, recent activity in recent games. It's going to be real interesting, and I think you a lot of fun. So we're going to break down the game, but we're going to break down the history of it as well. So we're going to get into a few things. Hey, got some great news today. A couple of things you want to stay tuned for. A couple of new members of this podcast that great deals that I've taken advantage of and I want to make you aware of. So be sure to listen for that as the podcast goes on. We've got a couple of questions that I want to get to as well. Probably do it in the latter part of the podcast, but we want to make sure that we always cover. If you've got a question, go to LandryFootball.com, send it to me, and I will address it. Tell me where you want to hear it, and I will address it right here on this podcast or anywhere you'd like me to address it. We definitely want to do that for you. All right, so let's get into this LSU-Alabama matchup. Historically, what it means, what does this game mean? What has it mean in the past several years? Look, let's call it what it is. The game of the century was 2011, as they call games of the century, happen seemingly every year now. That was certainly a meaningful game, a legendary game, a memorable game, a game that we still talk about. In its goodness, in its 9-6, some people think it was boring element aspects to it. Both teams, it was still, you know, fairly, you know, not new in Saban's era. I would say this, that the first couple of years that Saban got to Alabama, obviously with the connection having coached LSU, it's a little different. Once we got into 2011, that was a very good LSU team, a team that had national championship written all over it, a team that had a generational defense, not much offense, beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa 9-6. The punter was the MVP of the game. I mean, should have been the MVP of the game. It was the best player in the game. He made the biggest difference in the game. It created the field position differential. But since then, if you remember, a couple of months later, Alabama beats LSU in the national championship game, in the BCS national championship game, in New Orleans, no less. And it has been a complete domination by Alabama. Oh, not every game has been a blowout, but it's been decisive. It has been one inept offensive performance after another for LSU against really good Alabama defenses, no doubt. But the frustration has mounted. I have not seen this as a really good matchup for years and years. It has been one in which it's been hype from the standpoint of LSU teams look pretty good, but they don't quite measure up against Alabama, and they don't play as well, not as effective because of it. All those things, I think, have been a little bit overrated. Not this game. I have said it on record, and I'll say it again. LSU, unlike previous years, has every chance to go in and beat Alabama. They can line up, not only play with Alabama and beat Alabama. They're good enough to do it. Will they? We'll see. They are capable of doing it. I didn't think the past few years LSU had a realistic chance of beating Alabama. I thought that Alabama would have to help the cause, would have to lose the game to some degree. I didn't think there was the threat of LSU winning. Perhaps coming out on top one or two of those games was a possibility, but beating Alabama, didn't see that. I could see this. I absolutely could see it. I could see LSU winning this game. I could see it. Certainly see Alabama winning it, but that's what makes it different. And certainly when you look at this matchup heading into the season, it looks a whole lot better now. Why? Because of LSU. Joe Burrow on a Heisman run. Tua with his injury, still in the Heisman chase. I think this game has a lot on the line. Certainly from a national playoff perspective, certainly from a conference championship race perspective, but from a Heisman perspective. And the Heisman race goes right into the heart of why LSU is in position, unlike previous years, to compete in this game and win the game. It's very doable. Can it be done? Look, I'll get to a pick because I know everyone, what's your pick? I don't feel strongly about it either way. I can just start off by telling you that. I'll make a pick here at the end for grins, but I will tell you how I feel about a game in a strong sense. I really think this is one which I could absolutely see going in either direction. Now, a couple of things I want to get into the matchup. Then I'll work back in an historical perspective. But I want to talk about this matchup in its essence and kind of sum up certain things before we kind of go into the big picture aspects of this game. Yes, it's about the quarterbacks. Yes, it's about Tua's health. All those things are important. By the way, Tua looks fine in practice. Talking with the coaches, he's fine. He will be fine to start the game. I don't know if there's no swelling, for example, in practice or anything. I don't know if there's going to be a problem once the game progresses. Don't know if it's going to hinder his play or not. I don't know. That is going to have an effect if it does. But going into it, I think it'll be fine. In a game in which it's going to be focused so heavily on offenses that are so effective, it's going to put a lot of interesting challenges and pressure on the defenses to step up and not shut the opposing offense down, but play good situational defense. What is situational defense? To be able to maybe force a negative play on first down occasionally, to create a difficult third down situation, to greater enhance your ability to get off the field on third downs, the ability to be able to make a play in the red zone, to force into three instead of seven. Little things like that are going to matter. They're going to matter big. Possessions will matter to this degree, and that common sense with really good offense is you give one more possession than the other, you got more chances. It's like getting a mulligan, so to speak. You don't want to give good explosive offenses that don't need help. You don't want to give them help. Common sense, right? Here's the challenges. How do you do that? How do you get off the field on third downs? How do you slow down explosive offenses? Well, a couple of things that are different. Alabama works the in routes and the slants better, LSU works the vertical passing game better. It's done a little bit more strategically. There's a little bit more of the check down options in LSU's offense, whereas Alabama's a little bit more predetermined, pre-designed. Alabama is more run after catch oriented. LSU's passing offense is more vertical element tied to it. So what does that really mean? It puts the emphasis defensively on LSU being able to tackle well, to be able to take the quick slants and make sure that they're 4 yards and not 14 or 40 yards. For Alabama, it is vertical shots need to be slowed down. For LSU's vertical passing game, need to be affected by probably a lot of two-man looks, coverage looks, with pressure, particularly A-gap pressure, but force Burrow with trouble in his face, in his feet, force him to get rid of the ball a little quicker. Combined with being aggressive and rerouting receivers off the line of scrimmage so that you don't have the time with rerouting and pass rush pressure, both, not one, both, breaking up the timing. It's going to be the element. And then the adjustments off of that is going to be real pivotal. There are a couple of ways that you defend really good receivers. LSU has three great ones. Alabama has four receivers. So the ability to cover from your third and fourth corner slot, and that's a big difference, by the way. It sounds like a great little soundbite. Well, Alabama has the best four, LSU has the best three. Having four elite ones, that means you've got an extra problem trying to cover an extra guy. That's huge. LSU's going to play man coverage, play tight man coverage. They are not as effective playing zone. They were eaten up playing zone against Florida. I think they may mix some of it in, particularly some two-man looks, but what you have to do in tight man coverage is play to your help. You're going to have to force the football to come out quickly, and you're going to have to force it to your help, meaning you're going to have to take certain routes away, and you're going to have to force it into the routes that they're going to check to. And you're going to have to play to your help. Basically, force it, funnel it to your help. So good team defense, as it's always the case, even more so in terms of help coverage, is going to be pivotal. When you play some zone, if you choose to do so, the key to playing good zone against these type of elite receivers is you got to be spot on with your leverage in your placement, your hand placement, your foot placement, and you got to rally to the ball. You got to rally to the ball well, and can you rally well enough? You've got to do what your guys can do well. Stingley, for example, is one of the best cover guys in the country as a true freshman at LSU. And he's great at playing the ball, particularly a deep ball. But can he be as effective covering the quick slants, tackling well in space? That's going to be a challenge. That's going to be the difference in this game. The depth that you play your linebackers, how much you're going to commit pressure to. You know, do you want to rattle to it? Do you want to force him off his spot and test the ankle? You got to do all those things. You got to do all of it, quite frankly, and you've got to mix it up quite a bit. I think the running game is going to be pivotal in this matchup offensively because, again, what is the key? Yes, your offense has to score. Yes, that's your strength. Yes, defensively, you've got to find a way to get off the field situationally in coverage, tackling well. But the team that can run the football the best, the team that can get movement at the line of scrimmage the best, can limit the positions that the opposing offense has, and thus have a distinct advantage in winning this game. So look for that as well. I think that's pivotal. Let me tell you about HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Get easy seasonal recipes and pre-measured ingredients delivered right to your door. All you have to do is cook and enjoy. It's home-cooked meals made simple. HelloFresh makes cooking delicious meals at home a reality, regardless of the comfort in the kitchen. From step-by-step recipes to pre-measured ingredients, you'll have everything you need to get a wow-worthy dinner on the table in just about 30 minutes. Say goodbye to endless grocery store trips and takeout food. HelloFresh has you covered. Break out of your dinner rut with HelloFresh's 20-plus seasonal chef-curated recipes each week. There's something for everyone, from the family recipes to calorie-smart and vegetarian to fun menu series like Hall of Fame and Kraft Burgers. HelloFresh has more five-star recipes than any other meal kit, so you know you'll get something delicious. It's flexible. It fits your lifestyle. You can add extra meals to your weekly order, as well as yummy add-ons like garlic bread, cookie dough. Easily change your delivery days, food preferences, skip a week whenever you need. I know when I got it, I was skeptical. I'm not much of a cook, but it's so easy. When I got it in, all the ingredients are there. All the steps and instructions are there. It's idiot-proof. I know. I'm an idiot in the kitchen. It works so great. It made me feel like I could cook. It was just simple plug and play. It tastes great. It was healthy. I liked it. I love it. I think you should check it out today. For a limited time only, get 9 free meals with HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/LandryFootball9 and enter LandryFootball9. That's LandryFootball9. Check them out today. You'll love it. You'll enjoy it. LSU's been very effective in creating a lot of explosive plays defensively. Tackles for losses, forced fumbles, picks. Very, very good at that. Dave Aranda will have a lot of different unscouted looks prepared. And, of course, Nick Saban always has that. You're going to see some different looking stunts and pressures that might look similarly but will be designed differently post-snap. I think this is also a game in which you're going to have to, you hear this, take what the defense gives you. That doesn't tell the whole story. You have to dictate to the defense so that you can force the defense into giving you what you want to take. And so I think what you're going to see is both defenses try to bait the opposing offenses to run a little bit. I think you'll see some deep look safeties that will not creep up into the box as much pre-snap, but then rally and run into the box post-snap. I think both defenses would like to see these offenses run the football and maybe limit big play chances. But I think you're going to see an aggressive approach. I think you're going to see the ability to try to attack these defenses. But the team that can run the football most effectively, think about it. You reduce a possession a half by a possession a half. You get a one possession advantage in each half. You got one more offensive possession than the other team. You've just increases your chances significantly. Like having a mulligan, as I've said before, in other platforms. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. This is not the killer defense of Alabama in the past, and this is not the same LSU offense of the past. We know that. We know this is an electric Alabama passing game. It's a defense that LSU is not as dominant. But that all the more is going to be the reason of which defense is going to step up, which defense is going to create a mistake, a turnover that's going to be key. Alabama's coverage grade to this point in the year has been the best in the country. Remember, statistics in college football are useful to a point. It's reflective of who you played. So you can be rated the best, which they are, but level of competition, quality of passing games they face have to be factored into that. They've got good corners. Both these teams have good corners. They can match up effectively, but got edge pressure particularly. Alabama has better edge pressure. LSU's going to have to manufacture pressure a little bit more. LSU's going to have to run more stunts and games. Alabama can get home with a little bit more edge pressure. These are the number two, Alabama, number four, LSU, ranked scoring offenses. The film will endorse that. They're the number two, Alabama, and number five, LSU, in yards per play. The film will support that. They are number two, Alabama, number three, LSU, in pass efficiency rating. That the film mostly supports that. It is reflective of certain defenses that they've played. LSU's been a little bit more impressive on film in that it has done more against better defenses. Remember, Alabama has not played a Florida defense. They have yet to play Alabama. Those are two defenses that are pretty good that LSU has played and have had success again. Neither school has ever had a quarterback win the Heisman Trophy. Alabama hasn't really had many Heisman Trophy winners. LSU's had one, Billy Cannon. This would be the first quarterback. And this would be a story for the ages. You talk about a folk hero. Joe Burrow is absolutely that at LSU right now. Losing this game doesn't eliminate either team. LSU's in a better position if they lose this game to still be in the national playoff conversation because their strength of schedule is stronger. Now, Alabama, if they play LSU and lose to LSU, beat Alabama, their strength of schedule is going to get tougher as they play. Now, I think the only way Alabama loses to LSU and gets into the playoffs is if Tua goes out of this game with an injury. And it clearly suggests maybe that, look, Alabama is really good. They play well. It's close. But Tua's out. Tua gets healthy. I could see the path for them to get in. But that's too difficult to forecast now because there are other variables with other teams and how they look in comparison, which how they look now and how they look later are going to be two different things. So that's a question to be answered at a different point in time. The Nick Saban factor has always been huge. It's been a big part, and we're going to get into it, into why this matchups, this rivalry has been a little bit different. But Ed Orgeron has really done a good job of adjusting, taking a step back, and allowing and getting better coaches in there to make decisions that are important. Alabama's won 31 straight games at home. It's the longest active streak in the nation and the longest in the school history. Now, Alabama actually won 57 straight on campus from 63 to 82. When it played several games at Legion Field. It's the first time that Alabama has been a single-digit favorite at home in 4 years. They normally are double-digit favorites. What's interesting is Alabama cleverly has created this as, you know, Nick Saban never talks about rankings unless it suits his agenda. Interesting that he talked about LSU being ranked number one because they were ranked number one in the AP. So right now, you know, they may throw it out. Hey, ranked number one, and the playoffs, they're ranked number two. But they're ahead of Alabama. They're better than us. Everybody thinks they're better than us. He'll use that. I even hear his players saying, hey, they're number one, we're number two. They're using that. Trust me. They're using that in Tuscaloosa. Yeah, LSU's the best. LSU, people think LSU's going to win. Yeah, okay. That's how they look at it. There's no question LSU's on Alabama's on top of what LSU's doing, knows what they're doing. It's going to be the two most explosive passing attacks in the conference against defenses that are good but not great. LSU leads the SEC in passing plays that are longer than 20, 30, 40, 50, and 60 yards. Alabama is either second or tied for the first in all of those categories and leads the league in pass plays longer than 70 and 80 yards. Defensively, Alabama has allowed just six passes longer than 30 yards, one longer than 40, and none longer than that. LSU's given up eight of 30 yards or more and two of 40 yards or more. Both teams are likely to give up more big plays Saturday than they have at any point during the year. Yet, will they be tight? Who will be tight? Will both be tight? Will one be tight? So it'll be interesting to see how this one will play out, and it'll play out in front of the national audience. Kind of looking at the season, Joe Burrow's played well against Auburn's defense, hitting 76% of his throws. Florida's defense has been outstanding most of the year. Wore down a couple of their edge pressure guys, but Burrow hit 78% of his passes. Four touchdowns, 327 yards. Playing against this Alabama defense is going to be different. In some ways, not as talented as Auburn's defense, but yet, going to be tough. Going to be tough in that environment. Going to be tough in terms of the looks. They understand how smart he is, trust me. They understand how crafty he is. The RPO is going to be a big element. How Alabama defends the RPO. How they will manipulate the safety. The RPO is just that. It is optioning, and they're going to option in a lot of their crossers what LSU likes to do. Everyone talks about the RPO and run pass as it relates to optioning the end. But what LSU does so well in their offense is they option the safety. So safety play by Alabama, their play, good, will determine how effective they can be in defending LSU's passing attack. Because what they do is if they get the safety creeping up, they throw right behind him on the slant. If he stays deep, they'll hand the football off. So Alabama's ability to defend the run with seven so that they can keep the safety deep, force the handoff, and defend the run is the key to defending LSU. That, more than anything, will determine it. So it should be a lot of fun. Do you want to be able to watch every single NFL game this season, no matter where you live or what team you root for? This season, there's a proven way to watch every football game live for a fraction of the price of DirecTV or NFL Sunday Ticket. That's ExpressVPN. Here's how it works. You use ExpressVPN to buy the International Game Pass. ExpressVPN lets you spoof your location so you can buy the International Game Pass for just $125 and stream all the games. Whether you live in one part of the country and root for a team in another market, you can stream all of the games. That's what's great about it. ExpressVPN comes with apps for computers, mobile, and digital players like Fire TV. Plus, use ExpressVPN every time you go online to keep all your network data encrypted, secure, and safe from hackers. ExpressVPN is the fastest VPN I've tried, costs less than $7 per month, and comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Enjoy all 256 games of the 2019 season with the world's most trusted VPN, ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/Landry. That's ExpressVPN.com/Landry for 3 months free with a 1 year package. Visit expressvpn.com/Landry to learn more. Alabama hadn't beat anybody special. It doesn't mean they're not great. It just means they haven't beaten anybody special. That's just the way it is. Going to be a whole lot of fun. Going to be a whole lot of fun in looking at this matchup. What does this really mean nationally? I want to get into the historical perspective of this game, which I think is intriguing. Because this is not a great rivalry. It is not what you consider the typical rivalry. It is certainly not Alabama's biggest rival, not by a long shot, not even a candidate, quite frankly. What is pivotal to know is that Alabama in 2000, under Nick Saban, LSU finally wins in Baton Rouge in Nick's first year. He changed a lot of things about LSU football, the atmosphere. He changed the facilities. Again, LSU hadn't beaten Alabama in Tiger Stadium since 1969. Let me say this again. It's 2000. LSU hadn't beaten Alabama in Tiger Stadium since 1969. Think about that. 31 years. They'd not beaten them. LSU had not won in Tiger Stadium against Alabama since 1969. But it ended 30-28 with a victory in his first season. Josh Booty threw four touchdown passes. Josh Reed, Robert Royal. And they overcame a 21-14 second half deficit. Robert Royal recovered an onside kick with 7 seconds left. So two full decades. Entering into a third decade. Incredible. In 2002, Dennis Franchione got back at Saban's with a victory. Other than the 15-10 loss to Nebraska, regarded as among the best in college football history, in the first game at Michigan State, no Nick Saban team suffered a more decisive home loss than the one Alabama put on LSU in November of 2002. Alabama was ineligible for the SEC title with the NCAA sanctions, but showed the defending league champions, which LSU was, who the best in the West was that year. They rolled up 300 yards rushing, held LSU to 65 yards rushing, held the football for 35 minutes, had an impressive 9-play, 96-yard drive just before the half. Alabama ran the football in every play. Controlled the game, dominated the game. It was a complete humiliation of a game. And then 2005, Mobile, Alabama native, Jamarcus Russell leads LSU to an overtime victory. Alabama hopes of an undefeated season ended with that 16-13 overtime win. LSU tied it with 10 points in the third quarter after a scoreless fourth moved into overtime. Alabama's Jamie Christensen began the extra period with a 34-yard field goal, but then Russell threw a laser to Dwayne Bowe for a 12-yard game-winning touchdown. LSU went on to win the West. They lost to Georgia in the title game, while Alabama went 10-2 and won the Cotton Bowl. 2007, LSU wins in a wild offensive shootout with two late touchdowns. One of the highest scoring games in the series history was 41-34. its fifth straight win over Alabama. Nick Saban had returned from the NFL to take over Alabama. This was a huge favorite game. LSU was favored. Remember, this was Les Miles, who had inherited the program from Nick Saban. So LSU was actually better. And Saban ends up, after a couple of years with the Dolphins, goes to Alabama to try to clean up Mike Shula's mess. So it was a much better LSU team, and yet Alabama under Saban began to show that, uh-oh, for LSU fans, this ain't going to be pretty. This is going to be a nightmare having to go up against Nick Saban. 2008, Alabama wins in overtime in Saban's return to Baton Rouge. And it was huge, the storylines. Alabama had a shot at winning in regulation, but Ricky James Francois blocked a Lane Tiffin field goal attempt. Alabama's Rashad Johnson picked off for Jarrett Lee. Third interception of the game for Johnson, by the way. And they needed only to score to win. And then Wilson hit Julio Jones for 21 yards to the one, then carried the ball across the goal line, and they won it. 2009 was the game of the century. Alabama win. 2009 was the two top 10 teams. Alabama clinched the West with a 24-15 win. Then we get into the matchup of 2011, the game of the century, and then the rematch in the championship game. And now the string of domination by Alabama again. So, in short, in conclusion, what it really shows is that this team, it's not the greatest games that we've ever seen historically between these two. It's been more about big brother, little brother, trying to find a way to win against a team that you aspire to be. And Ed Orgeron's in the middle of it. He was a brief time was a player at LSU, was recruited by LSU, left to go to Northwestern State. He saw Coach McClendon not get it done. He saw Les Miles only got it done at LSU against Alabama with the program that Saban left him. But once Les got more and more control of the LSU program, it regressed relative to what Saban had it. And then Saban goes to Alabama, builds the dominant force there, and then Les ultimately gets fired because he can't compete against Alabama anymore. He's regressed. They've not done anything under Les since that championship game lost to Alabama. I mean, they won games, but they were a shell of themselves. And now Ed takes over, has done nothing, has not beaten Alabama. He's had no success against Alabama. He's like 0-6 against Alabama. Now, part of it is his time at Ole Miss as a head coach, but he's not beaten Alabama. He's not really had a team capable of beating Alabama. So the program hasn't been as good. It's still not as good consistently as Alabama's. But it looks, the program is, it's in everybody's head. It's in every coach's head, every fan base's head to beat Alabama. That game means more to LSU fans than it does to Alabama fans. Beating the big bad bully is what they've been striving to do. Ed's not been able to do it. He's not had the weapons to go into previous games with any chance of winning. He does now. Can he get it done? We'll see. I don't know. I have thought about it from a strategic standpoint for quite some time. I do think there's absolutely the matchups there for LSU to take advantage of and win, and it would not be an upset, even though the point spread says it is. It would not be an upset if LSU wins. With that said, as the game gets closer, I tend to think, I know LSU can win this, but will they? You're going into Tuscaloosa, where Saban hardly ever loses. It's been, 31 straight? You've got the strategic advantage what Saban and what he's able to do, although LSU is very good, it's tough. It's one of those I got to see it to believe it. I'm not going to be surprised if LSU wins it. And I'm not one of those that worries about, well, you know, I pick this right or wrong. I mean, I think it's a guessing game most cases because a lot of things will just happen one way or the other that determine the outcome. But I do think that if LSU wins it, it won't not surprise me at all. If Alabama wins, it doesn't surprise certainly doesn't surprise me. I really don't feel comfortable or feel strongly about one team over another. And there are some question marks surrounding injuries and effectiveness of play. With all that said, I tend to feel like you've got to win that type of game to prove to me that you're ready to take that step. I think LSU has proven it some degree last year at home against Georgia. They certainly proved it against Florida and Auburn this year. And I think LSU's the rest of their schedule is very favorable. Likely going to win out the rest of the schedule. There's not a team on their schedule. There's not a, pardon me, A&M does not match up with LSU and is not going to beat LSU. LSU after this game, he's got Ole Miss, which will not beat him. Arkansas, which will not compete with him. A&M, this game will ultimately put LSU in the conference championship game, and then it's going to be about LSU and Georgia competing for the SEC championship game. That conversation starts Sunday if LSU wins. Will they win? Will they get over that hump? Will they get the monkey off their back? Will they get the frustrations of previous years off their back? It's a storyline of epic proportions as it relates to LSU. For Alabama, it's just more business as usual. LSU's just the team that's next on their path. They're more concerned about taking care of business so that they can avenge winning a championship. Because any year that Alabama doesn't win a national championship, in their eyes, is a failure. It's falling short. If LSU wins against Alabama, their season's a success because they're going to go unbeaten. And then if they don't win the conference championship, they don't win the national championship, there will be disappointment, but there's going to be a lot of pride that LSU beat Alabama. If Alabama beats LSU, it's just another step towards the goal. And if they beat Auburn, and if they beat Georgia, and if they beat whoever in the playoffs and lose in the national championship game, it'll be a huge disappointment again. So it's different mindsets. How will that play into it? Will this be too much to bear for people involved and directly involved in this game? Certainly there'll be a decision or two that's going to factor into clarity of mind, dealing without the clutter of how important this game is, what this game could mean. You can't allow yourself that. We can talk about it. You can't if you're coaching in this game, preparing in this game, playing in this game. I don't think for 1 second that Joe Burrow is going to be bothered one iota about playing in this matchup and the difficulty and the challenge. He will eat this up. He will relish this. Whether they're going to win or not, I don't think it's going to have anything to do with him choking in the moment. I think Alabama can throw some things strategically at him that can break him off the mark. That can happen. But I don't see Joe Burrow wilting in the heat of the moment. And this moment, you want to talk about your big moment. Joe Burrow leads this team. You know, Ed Orgeron will be celebrated. Joe Burrow with a win will be celebrated. And likely, with the rest of their schedule, will only have, not only, but will be in a position to put up good numbers, have success. And if they're able to beat Georgia in the championship game, and Joe Burrow plays well in this game against Georgia, LSU will win, and Joe Burrow will win the Heisman. This is as big as it gets for LSU and LSU fans. Alabama, it's a big week, but it's the next step into the, you know, bigger part. LSU wins this game, LSU beats Georgia, and Joe Burrow wins the Heisman. This season is a success. It'll be disappointing if they don't end winning at all, but that's not the expectation. Alabama's expectation is to win it. It ought to be a lot of fun. Give me Alabama by 3 for no other reason. They have been in this moment before, but I got to tell you, folks, if you're really taking that as a sign that I feel real confident, I don't. I think this game could go either way. Should be a ton of fun. I appreciate you joining us. Got a couple of questions I want to get to before we call it a day. Hal asks, I've been attending Southern Miss football games pretty much my entire life. I'm 45. Southern Miss regularly beat the likes of Cincinnati, Central Florida, Houston, Memphis, Louisville, etc. not long ago and competed with bigger programs. How did USM get passed up by the AAC? Well, very simply, there's a lot more money. Houston program has Tillman Fertitta. Central Florida has a huge population and enrollment base. There's money. Cincinnati has put a lot of money into their programs. Memphis has as well. Louisville is a different category, Hal. Louisville's in the ACC now. So the advent of more money, it's money. USM is not a rich school, as you well know. They've got greater infrastructure. The recruiting has changed. Southern Miss lived before your time and then into your time, because I got to tell you, Southern Miss was even better before your time that you followed in my time. And they were better because Southern Miss would get a lot of what we call Prop 48s. Kids that didn't qualify to go to SEC schools would end up at Southern Miss. I mean, we'd send them there. I mean, it was right there. Kids in the Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi area, North Florida area, a lot of good players that went there that maybe didn't make the academic requirements. Where now, because of all these programs that you mentioned, with better facilities, that leads to better programs, it helps their recruiting efforts. So Southern Miss is not getting as many of those. So it really comes down the profile and the quote-unquote being an afterthought. Southern Miss is still respected, but there are other programs that are winning more because they're recruiting better, and they're recruiting better because they have a higher profile. They have a higher profile because they have more money than the others. So I don't know that it's what went wrong with Southern Miss, other than the fact that other people have more money and they've not been able to match that. That's what went wrong and what's caused them to slip in relation to the others. Greg asks, who do you think would be a good fit for the Florida State job? I think there are a few good fits for the Florida State job. Respectfully, there's one guy in particular that I've recommended I think would be the best fit. It would not be fair to him or to the program to discuss it publicly at this point. But I also think there are two or three other guys. And you know, don't get focused on anything other than get the hire right. Don't try to win the press conference, win the hire. That's my advice and has been my advice to Florida State. But I think there are a number of guys. There are four or five guys that would be really good. But the right guy is going to be able to recruit and develop players and to be able to kind of help the new infrastructure, potentially with a new administration coming forward, that are going to be able to build on some of the re-emphasis on fundraising and how they're going to put that money. Florida State has to get back to where they're becoming elite. You know, I've heard, you know, somebody put out a tweet or something about, well, Jimbo Fisher dominant in recruiting without the facilities. That's the whole point. That's why Jimbo left, because they didn't have the facilities. And he was doing a good job, and he couldn't compete, and eventually wasn't going to continue, and it hasn't continued, and they've been passed by. There's too much talent in that area, And I think what's happened is Florida State's lived on the fact that, oh, kids are going to want to come here and be Seminoles. Well, that's not the case anymore. Some of them will, but a lot of them are going to say, I'm going to go somewhere else. They look like they are committed to football a little bit more. I've seen their facilities versus yours. That has to change. And a new culture has to change with what we have. And it's been an underachieving coaching effort for the past couple of years at FSU. You got to get a guy that can take the talent that they do have to coach it up better and to be more competitive. And if they're going to catch Clemson, that's only going to happen with the improved facilities. But there's no reason why Florida State can't be the second best program in the ACC just based upon what they have and the talent that they have with better coaching. Are they the second best program in the ACC? I don't know if there is a second best program, but it sure as hell ain't Florida State right now. And it should be. It could be. And it will be with I think it's going to be a pretty good hire. Listen, it's early in the process. Hope you understand. But I think there are a few good guys. But I think that it's probably guys that are maybe a little bit off the radar with some folks. But I think the right hire and winning the hire and not winning the press conference is the key. All right, appreciate you joining us. Appreciate the questions. If you've got any, send them to me, and I will address it here or wherever you choose for me to address it. I appreciate you joining us. Enjoy the Alabama-LSU game. Enjoy all the week of college football, all the weekend of NFL, and we'll join you here on Tuesday to break it all down for you right here on the Landry Football Podcast on the Radio Influence Network.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.